Good morning, church. My name is Ben Banta, and our family's involved here in a life group. Please join me this morning. We're going to be reading out of Matthew 11, 28 through 30. It says, "Come to me, all who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light."
Thanks, Ben, for reading this morning. My name is Thomas, and I'm on staff here at Calvary. I primarily serve on the Erie campus. Today, Zach is in Boulder, and Tom is in Erie, and I get to be out here in Thornton with you, which is always a joy for me. I see familiar faces that I love, and I see new faces that I have never met before, and would love to meet you in the lobby if you would like to talk afterwards. Today, I'm going to continue us in the series of Formed. The series of Formed is the idea that we are all being formed by something or someone. I said in Erie the very first week, Henry Nouwen says that what it means to be human is a learned experience from other humans. That we are put first and foremost in a formational community called family, where we learn from the family members. Maybe we had a solo parent, or we had a mom and a dad. Maybe we had siblings, maybe we were an only child. But in some formational family, we learned what it was to be human, how to interact with humans. What it was to ask for forgiveness, to be generous, to be kind, all the rules of life, so to speak. And then we got older and we began to choose formational communities for ourselves. That's when we inserted friends, people we thought were really cool. Maybe it was something that they wore or they said or they had, and we wanted to be like them, and so we were attracted to them, that they would maybe rub off on us. And then we had teachers that helped form us. We've had coaches that have helped form us. And then later on in life, we started choosing other voices to help inform us that we would be formed by them. We started selecting podcasts to listen to, what books to read, what news sources to get information from. We started following people on Instagram, on YouTube, or on Twitter, because we wanted to be like them, to have them rub off on us. And so we said in the very beginning that the question is not, are you a disciple? The question is, whose disciple are you? A disciple is a student, an apprentice, a pupil, a follower. And we're all discipling someone or something. And as the followers of Jesus Christ, we said, we want our teacher, our Lord, to be Christ himself, that he would be fully formed in us, that his character, his nature, his attributes, love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control would be formed in us. And that's what we'd look like. His heart of justice and mercy, compassion would be our heart of justice and mercy and compassion. His generosity would become our generosity. And so what were the things that Jesus did in his life that formed him? What are the same things that we can do that would form us? And one of the most formational tools in our life is about time, where we choose to invest our time, specifically our downtime or free time. What we choose to do with it when we have space in our calendars, margin in our schedules, what do we do with that, particularly around this idea of Sabbath? Now, if you've never heard the word Sabbath, I'm going to unpack it a bit today. If you have heard the word Sabbath, there's probably a lot of emotion you just felt of like, oh no, are they bringing back the Sabbath? I thought we were over the Sabbath. I don't like the Sabbath. I felt abused by the Sabbath, or I don't even know really what the Sabbath was. It was always confusing to me. I just know I kind of went to church on Sunday. And so my goal today is actually the goal that Paul had in a church that was both Jew and Gentile, had different opinions about the Sabbath. And this is what the Apostle Paul said in Romans 14, speaking to this mixed community. Verse 5, he says, "One person esteems one day as better than another, while another esteems all days alike. Each one should be fully convinced in his own mind. The one who observes the day observes it in honor of the Lord. That you should become fully convinced in your mind what the Sabbath is for you, for your family, for your children. That your practice of Sabbath, you're fully convinced that this is the practice that forms you into Christ. So my goal is to help you unpack a little bit about where does the Sabbath show up in the Scriptures, and what would be the frame that we would want to have as we follow in the footsteps of Jesus. So the first mention of Sabbath is in a formational time in which God has freed the people from Egypt and brought them to Sinai on the way to a land of promise. And there, encamped at Sinai, God is giving to his people through Moses a formational law. Meaning, like, these are the ways I want my people to think about me. These are the ways I want people to treat one another. This is what reciprocity looks like. This is what justice looks like. This is what immigration can look like. I'm going to form for me a people to bring into a land of promise. That's where they receive the Ten Commandments, also known as the Decalogue. Deca meaning ten. The Ten Commandments of God for a community to be formed by. The fourth commandment is this. Chapter 20, verse 8. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, you or your son or your daughter, your male servant or your female servant, or your livestock or the sojourner who is within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and the earth, the sea, and all that is in them, and rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. This is the structure of their week. 6 days working, 1 day was to be rest. And they were going to form this not in the story of Abraham, not in the story of Noah, not even in the story of Adam, but in the story of God's creation. Before the fall, there was a Sabbath rest that the Decalogue points to. So Genesis chapter 2, if you want to go there, second page of your Bible. Genesis chapter 2, we see the conclusion of 6 days where God has been creating. He's made the heavens and the earth and all that is in the heavens and the earth, and he has filled the heavens and filled the earth with all sorts of wonderful things. He's brought forth all of these species according to their kind. On the sixth day, he does something radically different. He makes humanity in the image of God, after his likeness. He makes them male and female, and there's a wedding ceremony. And then it says, in chapter 2, verse 1, thus the heavens and the earth were finished, and all the host of them. And on the seventh day, God finished his work that he had done, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work that he had done. And this is key, verse 3. So God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it God rested from all his work that he had done in creation. This is the first time the word holy shows up in your scriptures. Holy means to be set apart, distinct from what was ordinary, what was regular, what was Monday through Friday, so to speak. This is not in the sense of like idleness. This is something in a different direction. A new activity begins in which the affections and the attentions are God-centered. And so when God rests, he's not resting because he's exhausted. He's resting in the sense of he's resting in. He's delighting in what he has done. He's reflecting on the good work that has been accomplished. And he is resting from his work. Abraham Heschel, the Jewish rabbi, points out, not only is this the first time that God uses the word holy here, but it's remarkable that he has made the very first thing to be holy time itself. He doesn't make a location primarily holy. He doesn't build a temple first and call it holy. The very first thing that God makes holy is time. And so it doesn't matter what your socioeconomic class is, where you're going to live in the world, what time you're going to live in the world in history, there is a set of time that God has separated from what's ordinary and regular, and he's called it holy. So if you want to engage with the holy God, there is time that he has set apart for that to happen. Time itself becomes holy. Heschel makes a critique of the Western world and says, man, the Western world has no appreciation for the holiness of time. If I was to ask you what your most precious commodity is, you might say, well, it's all the money I have in the bank. Because of its volume, it's your most precious commodity. Or you might say, I don't have very much money, but I have this heirloom from my great, 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 great parents. And its rarity, its memories, its place in time is so important to me, and so that's what's most valuable. Let me suggest that the time itself is your most precious commodity. You can't get more of it. Everyone's going to experience 24 hours in a day, 7 days in a week, 12 months in a year. And I don't know how many years you have. You can't go back into it. You can't move forward into it. You can't stop it or accumulate it. The only thing you get to do with time is what you're doing with it right now. What you're choosing to how to spend it in the moment. Time is the most precious thing. Heschel says this is why the Western world exchanges it for all the wrong things. Basically, we want to know, if I give you an hour of my time, how much money will you give me back for it? And so we have reduced time to dollars. Its value is rooted in how many dollars will you give me for my time? If you give me enough dollars, then I'll go there. I'll do that. I'll work there. We talk about downtime, free time. We talk about killing time. And that's just like, it's holy. Why are you trying to kill it? First thing that God does is he works 6 days and then he rests. Means he ceases from creation. This is a remarkable act of God. We often focus on the great work of God in bringing from nothing all creation. There's another great work of God on day seven. It's remarkable. It's that he knows when to stop creating. Notice he didn't build a house. He didn't start a city. He didn't engineer a car. He didn't give Adam and Eve iPhones. He embedded these things in his creation so that the imago Dei, the image of God, would then bring them forth and do like work. They would create as well, but he knew when to stop creating. Do you have any idea when to stop creating? Do you have any idea when enough is enough and it's time for you to rest? Sabbath is rooted in the creation story when God knows when to stop creating. To rest in means he's delighting in his creation. He's contemplating his creation. He's filling his creation. Do you know how to do that? The second time the Decalogue shows up outside of Exodus is in Deuteronomy, Deuteronomy chapter 5. And here we see another insight on Sabbath. Not only is it rooted in God's work rest rhythm, but it's also rooted in God's great redeeming work. Verse 12, observe the Sabbath day to keep it holy as the Lord your God commanded you. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, you or your son or your daughter or your male servant or your female servant or your ox or your donkey or any of your livestock, or the sojourner, the immigrant, who is within your gates, that your male servant and your female servant may rest as well as you. You shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and the Lord your God brought you out from there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, reflecting on the Exodus story, therefore, the Lord your God commanded you to keep the Sabbath day. So, to help remind you the good work that God has done to redeem you, to now form you and bring you into a place of promise, that you're going to look different than all the other nations around you, that you're going to schedule your life in a different way. It's to remind that what God has done bring you out of slavery, remember the Sabbath. This is so important. When they were in Egypt, how many days a week did they work? Seven. How many days off did they get? Zero. What was their value in the economy of Egypt? What was their identity in the economy of Egypt? It's one thing. Their value and their identity is rooted in one thing. How many bricks did you make today? How many bricks did you make this week? What have you done for me recently? And if you stop making bricks, if you stop producing, you are no longer valuable to the economy of Egypt. Do you think some Americans would benefit to be reminded on the regular that their value is not rooted in how many bricks they made this week? That's what God's doing with his people. I don't want you to think of your value and your identity in what you produced. I want you to be reminded on the regular, every single week, when you stop working, to remind yourself that you are made in the image of God, that God loves you, has fearfully and wonderfully made you, and you are not what you made this week or didn't make this week. What you bought this week or didn't buy this week, you're resting in the identity of who you are in God. And so a Sabbath is not the idleness of his children. It's different activity. That's what makes it holy. It's different than the regular activity of the week. You're stopping, you're saying, look at God's goodness and his greatness, what we just sang about. Look at all the good works that you have done this week. I ate every single day this week. You kept me healthy, or you got me healthy. You got me through that sickness. You brought in new contracts. I don't know what it is for you. Look at the good works of God. And then to say, God, you're great. Remind me who you are. You're wonderful. And I'm resting in that. That's what Sabbath looks like. Now, I didn't point this out first hour, but I figured, you know, it's second hour. This thing doesn't have to end. But notice how there as a country are going to look different. Now, we don't live in Israel. We don't live under the kingship of Jesus Christ. We live in Babylon. I get it. But look at how if the whole country lives this way, what happens? He says, you can't let any of your animals work on this day either. They all get to rest. And all of the people that you employ, your servants, they all have a day off too. They have to rest. In fact, even those who are sojourners, the immigrants, they have to rest too. So, because it says that your servants may rest as well as you, which means like your rest doesn't get to be built on someone else's labor in Israel. How amazing is this? It's been said that all abolition movements begin in Sabbath, where whether you are a native, a foreigner, high esteem or low esteem, we are all treated with equality in God's rest from our work. So that our identity is rooted in who God is. Isn't that wonderful? Isn't that wonderful? Don't you want a Sabbath? And so this is Sabbath rest, rooted in creation story of how God works and rests, ceases from the activity, does a different activity. It's holy. It's a blessing to his people. Then to be reminded that you are not what you can produce. You are made in the image of God, fearfully and wonderfully made, loved and redeemed. Now, they continue to practice Sabbath well and not so well through their story. We were just in the book of Nehemiah. At the end of Nehemiah, Nehemiah has to reinstitute the Sabbath. Do you remember this? Well, from Nehemiah to Jesus, they double down on the Sabbath. They get really serious about guarding this thing as holy, set apart. And they add on top of what God has called them to cease from other activities. It's called building a fence around the law. So they start adding their own thoughts and traditions and ideas of what it looks like to keep the Sabbath holy. They start instituting, how far can you walk on the Sabbath? What's considered work on the Sabbath? If your donkey falls into a pit and he's rescued, can you do that on the Sabbath? If your family member is sick, can you care for them? Can you help someone on the Sabbath? And almost conclusively, they say, no, that's all against keeping the Sabbath holy. We have to cease from everything. And Sabbath becomes a burden to the people. It becomes a duty instead of a delight. And Jesus comes to reinstitute what the Sabbath is to be, to give it back to humanity as a blessing. So this is Matthew chapter 11. picking up where Ben read. We often read this and don't follow its context. Verse 28 of chapter 11, Jesus says, "Come to me, all who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls." Like, your core being will find rest. "For my yoke is easy and my burden is light." This is an invitation to come to Jesus and take on his form that fits so well, that gives you life, rest for your soul. Now, we often stop there because that's the end of chapter 11. But these chapter breaks are not there in the original text. This is just to help us find our way in the text. And the very next thing about rest is about Sabbath. Oh, this is a Sabbath conversation that Jesus is having. Chapter 12, verse 1, "At that time, Jesus went through the grain fields on the Sabbath. His disciples were hungry, and they began to pluck heads of grain and to eat. But when the Pharisees saw it, they said to him, 'Look, your disciples are doing what is not lawful to do on the Sabbath.'" They're talking about their own traditions, their own fence that they've built around this law. Because plucking a head of grain and feeding yourself would be like harvesting in their categories. And Jesus has to correct this. He says in verse 3, "Have you not read what David," this King David, "did when he was hungry, and those who were with him? How he entered the house of God and ate the bread of the presence, which is not lawful for him to eat, nor those who were with him, but only the priests." Now, they came into the temple and they had holy bread there that they should not be eating. But David took holy bread and gave it to hungry men. An act of mercy, compassion, to revitalize them, care for their needs, renew their strength. He says, that's a good thing. He didn't break the rules. Verse 5, "Or have you not read in the law how this on the Sabbath the priests in the temple profane the Sabbath and are guiltless?" Like, they're working in the temple. They're working on the Sabbath, and they're not guilty of breaking it. Someone has to lead the community gathering on the Sabbath, and they're not guilty. Verse 6, "I tell you, something greater than the temple is here. And if you had known what it means, 'I desire mercy and not sacrifice,' you would not have condemned the guiltless. For the Son of Man is the Lord of the Sabbath." Like, you've taken something that I created, and I called it a blessing. It was for you. It was a blessing for you. And you have taken it and corrupted it in so many ways that people now no longer want the Sabbath in their life. He says, "I desire mercy on the Sabbath, compassion on the Sabbath, things that give life on the Sabbath, and I'm the Lord of it." In a similar episode, this is Mark chapter 2, he makes it abundantly clear this is what he means. In a similar conversation on Sabbath code, Jesus says to them, "The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. So the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath." Like, I made this thing, I own this thing, and I have gifted this thing for you. I made this Sabbath, this ceasing from labor, to stop producing and remember the good works of God and who God is for you to rest in. Take a deep breath. Be renewed. And you have taken this thing and have built precept upon precept, tradition upon tradition, so that people are like, "Oh, the Sabbath, is it really tomorrow? I'm so bummed." And here Jesus is correcting their thinking and then elevating it, saying, "I'm the Lord of it. Like, I own this thing." When he invites people to come to him for true Sabbath rest, just imagine resting in Jesus Christ. Like, it's not even a day off, like, "Oh, I didn't do enough this week, but he tells me to stop. And there were things I did this week that weren't so great, but I'll do better next week." No, you get to fully rest in Jesus. "That was enough this week. My sin is forgiven. The Lord is gracious. I'm okay. I'm who God says I am. Beloved. Co-heir with Christ, where this whole thing is going. God's going to redeem it all, bring us into eternal kingdom forever." Tomorrow's Monday. Let's do it. And there's a day in which you pause and reflect on Jesus, for he is the Lord of the Sabbath. If you have a Sabbath rest without Jesus being part of it, that's not Sabbath. He's not talking about just simply a vacation. I love vacations. I love to go travel. I love to experience so many things, go on adventures. But what often happens is I'm working up to a vacation, like, oh, I need a vacation. Then I go on vacation. And then what's the first thing you say to yourself when you get back from your vacation? I need another vacation. Like, man, I'm even more tired now. Now, this is real rest. On the regular, in which you set apart time that's holy, that Jesus is the Lord of that time. Now, what's Jesus doing on the Sabbath? Well, Jesus is often teaching. If you read the Gospels, it's Sabbath day. They're gathering at the synagogue, which is Saturday, and he's coming in and he's teaching. He's often healing on the Sabbath. People would try to entrap Jesus by bringing someone who's sick or has an ailment to see if he will heal the person, because that's going to break the Sabbath in their mind, and he'll heal them. What do you find Jesus doing in the evenings of the Sabbath? Gathering around the dinner table, even with Pharisees, and delighting in fellowship, community, around food. That's a different kind of Sabbath than maybe we imagined it. Jesus is teaching, working, healing, around food, delighting in company, saying, I'm the Lord of this rest. Now, this is why, go back to Romans chapter 14, the church has this big conversation. What is the Sabbath? Because there's a group of people, the Jews, who have been practicing Sabbath from Friday night to Saturday night for 1,000 years in some form. And now the church is wide open through Jesus Christ, and Gentiles who have never practiced a holy day in their entire life are coming into the church. And the question is, what do we do about this? Like, do they have to now practice Sabbath with us? And Paul, let me remind you, chapter 14, verse 5, one person esteems one day as better than another, while another esteems all days alike. Each one should be fully convinced in his own mind. Let me ask you this. Are you fully convinced in your mind that your current practice of Sabbath is the way it should be practiced? Are you fully convinced in your mind the way that you choose to practice or choose not to practice a Sabbath is the good blessing God has for you to form you into his likeness? Would you like to experience a Sabbath? Would this be something you'd want to incorporate into your life? A holy break from the regular work, set apart time, in which Jesus is the Lord and owner of. Perhaps to gather with friends and family around the things of God, to remember his goodness, to focus on his greatness, to be renewed and restored on the regular for the week ahead. Wouldn't that be wonderful? So this is, he continues to have to teach the church that this is the crux of the matter. Don't let anybody impose on you this idea of Sabbath be fully convinced in your own mind. This is what he teaches to the church in Colossae, where they have the same conversation about all of these holy things, what we have to do, what we not have to do. Verse 16, therefore, let no one pass judgment on you in question of food and drink, or with regard to a festival or a new moon or a Sabbath. These are a shadow of the things to come, but the substance belongs to Christ. A true Sabbath is Christ. Now, how did we get to this idea of Sabbath maybe being Sunday? Is this Sabbath? Are we doing Sabbath right now? Are we supposed to be doing Sabbath? Can you work today? Can you not work today? Can you play this afternoon? What about sports? How do we get here? Well, let me try to fill in some of the gaps so you might be fully convinced in your own mind how to practice a regular rhythm of ceasing from creating, resting in God's goodness and greatness, being reminded of his works of redemption in your life in which Jesus is the Lord and owner of that time. So when Jesus is ministering in the flesh, he's practicing Sabbath. So on Sabbath, so that's Friday night to Saturday night, always happens at sundown, is the beginning of Sabbath, he'll come into the synagogue and he will teach on the Sabbath. We saw him healing on the Sabbath, gathering and delighting in fellowship on the Sabbath. He's aware of what the Sabbath is. Now, after his resurrection, the apostles continue to practice some Sabbath rhythm. They're going to the synagogue on Sabbath, that's Saturday, teaching in the synagogue, often bringing healing, joining each other in fellowship, delighting in that same rhythm. But the apostles add a certain gathering. They start gathering on Sunday as well. They start gathering the first day of the week, which is Sunday in the Jewish calendar. And the reason they start gathering on Sunday is because that's Resurrection Day. That's when their Lord, Jesus Christ, the Lord of the Sabbath, rose from the dead and began a new day. A new creation, a new life. And they said, well, let's gather as that new community on the first day of the week when he rose from the dead, which was Sunday, as they continued to gather in the synagogue on Saturday. So they would gather together, and this is Acts 2:42, and they would devote themselves to the apostles' teaching, to the breaking of bread, to the fellowship, and to prayer. That's what they're doing, maybe before work or after work, because it's the first day of the week. Well, as the church grows, Gentiles are coming in with Jewish believers. And that's where the Romans question is. Well, what do we have to do now? And Paul says, be fully convinced in your mind how to practice holy Sabbath. Well, as the church grows, it grows more and more Gentile and less Jewish. And more Gentiles come in and they begin to believe, this is the patristic age, the early church fathers saying, see, Sabbath is not something we do anymore. We've separated it. Jesus is the Lord of the Sabbath. All time is Sabbath. And so it's not so much should we separate ourselves one day a week from our work, but we should separate ourselves from the world. All time now is holy. We separate ourselves from sin. And it becomes spiritualized as a metaphor of the Christian life resting in the work of Jesus Christ. And you can see where they get this. Justin Martyr points out his claims saying, you have to practice Sabbath. I mean, Abraham didn't practice Sabbath. Noah didn't practice Sabbath. But remember, we looked at Sabbath from the creation story. Augustine continues to teach the metaphor of Sabbath being the Christian life to separate itself from sin, but they don't separate a day of the week to Sabbath rest in the early church years. Well, this happens all the way to about the 13th century when a man named Thomas Aquinas makes a profound teaching on the Sabbath when he says, okay, hold on, you guys have gotten this whole thing. The Sabbath is not in the ceremonial laws of God, in which Jesus has fulfilled and done away with. This is found in the Decalogue, in the Ten Commandments, which is the moral law of God, which has not gone away. Therefore, we're going to keep the Sabbath. What this point, when is the church gathering? Is Sunday. They haven't been gathering on Saturday for a long time now. And so now they're gathering on Sunday, and they say, what day should we separate ourselves from work, cease from working, and draw attention to God? Well, we're already doing that on Sunday. Sunday is synonymous with the Sabbath. So Thomas Aquinas points out that it is in the moral code of God, therefore we're going to follow it. We're going to follow it now on Sunday. So Sunday becomes the day in which we separate ourselves from the work of the world and devote ourselves to the attention and affections of God. So then you get to the reformers in the 16th century. That's like Luther, Calvin, Tyndale. And they have differing views on the Sabbath. Tyndale, he's an anti-Sabbatarian, says, nope, we ain't doing anything that looks Jewish. Luther similarly tries to distance himself from anything that looks like a Jewish tradition. Calvin, on the other hand, though he didn't practice a day of the week Sabbath, he does point out in Genesis, in his commentary on Genesis, that the Lord has a rhythm of work and rest. And we should have a rhythm of work and rest and set apart a day for Sabbath. That's holy. That's different work in which we're giving our attention and affections to God. This gets picked up by the Puritans later on. And the Puritans begin to really devote themselves to this idea that it's not the seventh day, but one in 7 days needs to be devoted to holy rest. That teaching becomes very popular in England and in Scotland and finds its way into the Westminster Catechism. This is where your good Presbyterian faith comes from. This is where Eric Liddell, I won't run on Sunday, Chariots of Fire, he's built up in this tradition that it is one day in seven, it is the Lord's Day, and this is the type of work that you can and can't do. You can't run anymore on the Sabbath day. Now, here's what I love about Liddell, or Eric Liddell, however you say his name. He was fully convinced. He was fully convinced. Are you that convinced? How you're practicing Sabbath to form you in the likeness of Jesus. But after Liddell, many people were asking, no work on Sunday, no play on Sunday. And they would talk about all these different rules. They would talk about what you can do in what's called the vacancy, morning church service and evening church service. And the Presbyterians would allow you to do a few things. Go back to your home for devotions, to meditate on the sermon that was given, to explain the sermon to your children or community, or yourself to prayer. Those are the only things you could do. And it looked like a fence again was being built around the law. And the people said, hold on a second, what would Paul say? Paul said, be fully convinced in your mind, whether you esteem one day as holy or not, what is the Sabbath? And if you esteem a day holy, it's to the Lord, for he is the Lord of the Sabbath. And so when you think about what does Sabbath look like in your life, form it in these things. It's in the creation story. It's God's work rest rhythm. It's in the Exodus story of God's redeeming work, bringing you out of slavery so you are not identified in what you can produce. And it is absolutely fundamentally rooted in Jesus Christ being the Lord of the Sabbath. How many of you would really like to incorporate Sabbath in your life? Let's figure it out for our formational good. Now, here's how my family and I practice Sabbath. We incorporate on Sunday. So Saturday night, we're in home around the table. We got our food out. We're playing some tape. We're playing some games, hanging out. It's a really low-key night. Rarely will you find us out on a Saturday night, though occasionally we will be out. And then on Sunday, I teach. It's okay. This is the community I want to be with on my Sabbath, the one that is setting apart holy time in which their attention and affections are towards the Lord and his goodness and greatness. And then Sunday afternoon looks real slow. Going back, having lunch, hanging out with the kids, going to the park, playing, having a great afternoon. I'm probably going to find a nap in there at some point. Napping in the Lord's the best. And then maybe some families are coming over to our house, or maybe we're going over to someone's house that's invited us from Calvary, and we're sharing a meal probably on Sunday night. Oftentimes our middle schoolers are coming back to the church for a middle school program to be with their community as they direct their attention and affections towards God. But it's real slow. I'm not doing work during the week, trying to get ahead. I'm not checking email. I'm not doing those things. It's holy, set apart, different time. Now, my kids are in sports. My kids are in your world. And we all have different kinds of worlds. Like some of us work two 16s. 3 12s. Some of us have a 4-day work week, a 5-day work week. Some of us are retired. Some of us have our teachers and have the summers off. That's why I think it's all grace of Jesus. It's all his grace. It's an invitation to step into holy time that's a blessing to you. And you get to figure it out. How does it work for you, your family, your marriage to set apart time to be formed in the likeness of Christ? Now, I wish this sermon ended like a pretty bow, and it's like, and that's Sabbath. Let's all do it. But I give you just homework. Like, you become fully convinced in your mind. Is your schedule and your rhythm of practicing Sabbath the Sabbath that you see here that you want to incorporate that will form you in the likeness of Christ?